Welcome back to Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. Today we're in the Grey Lodge once again to talk Twin Peaks. And it's a special episode because this is the season finale to episode one. Season one, episode seven, aka episode eight, The Last Evening. This is going to take us on a journey into the realm of the damaged gods as we consider the occult perspective of the cosmic mind. And the initiates will go through rituals of death and resurrection. We're going to catch up on James, Donna, and the Scooby-Doo gang there, as well as Cooper and Truman's sting operation over there at One-Eyed Jack's. Find out what lights Laura's F-I-R-E today when we bite the bullet, baby. So join me. Join me in the Grey Lodge. This episode, we got a lot to get through today, so we're going to keep it moving. This episode, directed and written by Mark Frost. Originally aired May 23rd, 1990 on ABC. It's hard to believe we're already at the end of the first season. Now, your perspective of time is going to be very skewed when you watch Twin Peaks because season one is a blip. Then season two goes on way too long. And then season three is a fair balance, dare I say. And look, that's not, you know, no cap, no shade, whatever, right? I love Twin Peaks. You can make it 50 episodes long, and I will watch all of it. But I just want to give you perspective. And in fact, season one and season two, it might as well just be one massive season. And in reality, season one, season two, and season three, you might as well just consider one massive tale. So let's get into this episode. It's called The Last Evening. James and Donna, they are at Dr. Jacoby's place doing a little research because they kind of suspect maybe Jacoby killed Laura. And they find the half of the broken-hearted necklace and a cassette in a coconut. Fitting, because he's very into that Hawaiian stuff. And they also, and there's a note in there about the about how they were in Hawaii or something on the date that the man landed on the moon, which I thought was kind of interesting, right? Well, meanwhile, Jacoby, he thinks he's going to see Laura, which we already know is Maddie in a wig. And he goes to the gazebo, even though he's supposed to be meeting her at Sparkwood and 21, which is the location where Laura was last seen when she jumped off of James's motorcycle. But hey, you know, everyone's allowed a little plot inconsistencies once in a while. So he goes to the gazebo, and he catches one in the dome. Someone knocks him in the head. The camera zooms in on his all-seeing eye. Why the horror? Is he dead? We don't know yet. Well, Cooper, he's up at One-Eyed Jack's. Remember, he's up there with Big Ed doing a little recon, and he's playing poker. No, he's playing blackjack, excuse me. And Jacques Renault is the card dealer. What is that, the right name? Anyway. And Cooper slides the poker chip that has the piece missing from it and offers to buy Jacques a drink. And we're going to come back to that in a second. Meanwhile, in the same One-Eyed Jacks, Audrey, if you recall, is up there to be a working girl to do a little recon to figure out what's going on there because she suspects Laura was working at One-Eyed Jacks. And she goes to meet the Madame Blackie. And Blackie has some tarot cards on her desk. Yes, she's practicing tarot, one of the essential elements of occultism. You can't really tell what cards they are, at least not on my medium definition viewing of it. So Audrey, she goes in to see Blackie, and Blackie tells her, hey, the owner's coming by tonight, and he likes to meet with the new girls, if you catch the drift. So Blackie and Audrey's like, oh really, you know, because she doesn't know who it is. And Blackie tells Audrey to pick a select a card from this deck of cards. She chooses the Queen of Diamonds. And there's a really odd part of the show where after she selects the Queen of Diamonds, Blackie almost seductively grabs Audrey's hand and the camera sort of pans away. Is there some sexual connotation there? I don't know. Something happened there. And this is a good time to bring up a point I've got for you. I'm going to walk you through all of Twin Peaks, right? I'm going to point out a lot of occult symbolism. You are only going to scrape the surface with me. I could not and will not go through every single theory and idea presented in Twin Peaks. That's going to be half the fun for you. I'm going to give you a lot of information and a lot of ideas, and you can actually take this and do your own research. You could listen to other podcasts. They're going to be clearly inferior to this one. You can read other books, which will clearly be inferior to the one I'm going to write, but there's a lot of ideas and themes you could dive into. You could, that's why I was hesitant to even go down this route, this road, if you will, of Twin Peaks, because I thought, man, what could I say that hasn't possibly already been said? But it turns out there's a lot of occult concepts that I haven't heard on anyone's show yet. I've listened to several podcasts. Some are better than the others. Diane particularly is one of my favorite. And they're very knowledgeable on the occult, but they'll bring up the occult and they'll gloss right over it. And I think, man, like, let's hear more, right? Like, I want more. Which is, you know, no shade. No cap, no shade. It's a great show. And I think those hosts are very well educated on some of these ideas. I just wanted a more focus on it. And they seem to focus maybe more on the storyline and the cinematography aspect. And that's not what I'm doing. I'm walking you through the story, but I'm telling you the occult symbolism throughout. And this is one example of something that you could dig into, and maybe you're going to find something that you find relevant to the storyline. Why does Blackie grab Audrey's hand? I don't really know. And it's possible I just missed something, you know? We are talking about 52 plus hours of viewing. So, I always think that, but I thought, man, have I ever mentioned that to you guys? Well, never have. This is, like I said, you're going to scratch the surface. You can go as deep into Twin Peaks as you want. And I guarantee, there's people that have watched this show, and I'm not exaggerating. You're going to hear people say that they've seen certain episodes over 100 times. 100 times. Sounds crazy, doesn't it? Well, once Twin Peaks gets in your brain, you can't get it out. And sometimes I had to finish the whole series before it finally hit me that I was like, what is happening to me now? I can't enjoy anything else. So I get it, because I've already watched it through twice. I'm on my third time through. All right. Anyway, getting back to it. Okay. Cooper, he's talking to Renault. And what he's doing is he's pretending to be the supplier, the bank, for Leo Johnson. And he offers Jacques Renault money to run a drug deal because there's a sting operation and Truman and Andy, they're going to arrest his ass. He doesn't know it yet. And he gets some information about the night Laura died. They had... I'll play the clip and then we'll come back. Take a listen.
One more question, Jack.
You know, Leo told me all about that night at the cabin with the girls.
I'm curious about the chip. How'd that happen?
It was that crazy bird.
Bird?
He had a thing for Laura, saying her name all the time. Like he's in love or something. So we're all partying. Girls are all getting pretty high. Everybody's pretty crazy.
You, Laura, and Ronette.
Leo lets Waldo out of the cage, and the bird, he lands on her shoulder. Laura, she's all tied up. Oh, she like that. But the bird, he starts picking on her shoulder, picking like love picks or something, you know what I mean? So Leo, he's doing a number on her. But Laura, she's screaming about the damn bird. So Leo takes out a chip, puts it in her mouth, and says, "Bite the bullet, baby. Bite the bullet."
Thanks for clearing that up.
Yeah, no problem.
See you on the other side.
Can do, Cappy.
We find out that Jacques and Leo had Laura Palmer tied up. She's 17 years old, mind you. Tied up because she liked it. And Leo was doing her, and he put the chip in Laura's mouth. I said, bite the bullet, baby. And that's a really creepy scene. It's one of the iconic Twin Peaks moments of zooming in on Jacques' saliva-ridden mouth. And it's slow motion. Bite the bullet, baby. Like, it's super creepy, right? And it's shocking. It's shocking how graphic this show went, seemingly out of nowhere. All innuendo, basically, up until this point. And now we hear about Leo tying up Laura and giving it to her, who, and she was into that kind of thing. I mean, it's wild, right? And for me, one of the turning points for me on Twin Peaks, this is one of them, but when you watch Fire Walk With Me, it's like pouring jet fuel on it. You're gonna watch that and be like, is this the same story? You know? Because obviously they got to make it somewhat clean for ABC and the censors, right? That's a mainstream television show. I think they sort of pushed the envelope on this episode to see if they'd get renewed for season two, to see how dark they could go, maybe. Anyhow. So, meanwhile, Leo Johnson, he confronts Shelley and abducts her, and he takes her to the sawmill because he's planning to burn it down. Remember, Ben Horn arranged to have Leo burn the sawmill down. And he's like, two birds, one stone. I'm going to tie Shelley up and take her out, too, because he knows that Bobby Briggs has been stoping Shelley. Meanwhile, Jacques heads right for the trap where Truman and Andy arrest him for the murder of Laura Palmer and the attempted murder of Ronette Pulaski. And Jacques, he pulls the strap, but Andy, he's quick on the gun. He blasts him, right? And what's curious here is that Cooper, you recall, Cooper had the good intuition because earlier, I think it was episode 2, I could be wrong, where Andy dropped his sidearm and Cooper mandates that Andy take several hours of practice of shooting his gun. So it's almost like Cooper had the intuition to know that this was going to be necessary down the road. Next, Donna, James, and Maddie, they regroup and they've got this cassette that they found in Jacoby's coconut. And it's the date is from the 23rd, which I find ironic because the episode aired on May 23rd, but, you know, completely irrelevant. Even though the 2023 is a number in Discordianism and the, what do you call it, the 23 Enigma. But, you know, we don't want to get wrapped around the axles too hard here. But on the clip, she talks about how dumb James is. Everyone hates James, this poor guy. And listen to what she says. She talks about how, you know, he's sweet, but she can only take so much of sweet. Take a listen.
Hey, what's up, Doc? It's Laura, in case you haven't guessed. It's Thursday, the 23rd, and I'm so bored. Actually, I'm in kind of a weird mood. God, James is sweet, but he's so dumb. And right now, I can only take so much of sweet. Hey, remember that mystery man I told you about? Well, if I tell you his name, then you're gonna be in trouble. He wouldn't be such a mystery man anymore, but you might be history man. I think a couple of times he's tried to kill me. But guess what? As you know, I sure got off on it. Isn't sex weird? This guy can really look flight, my F-I-R-E, is in Red Corvette. Uh-oh. Here comes Mom with milk and cookies.
Now, we heard her say that there was a mystery man that tried to kill her, but it gets her off, all right? And he drives a red Corvette that lights her F-I-R-E. Now, what's interesting is that Prince sang a very provocative song called Little Red Corvette. And, you know, the official version of what the song means is questionable to me. Officially, it's based on an experience from his bandmate, Lisa Coleman, who owned a Mercury Montclair Marauder. Prince fell asleep in the back of the vehicle, and the lyrics came to him in a lucid state. That's my interpretation of it. But the song has lyrics about pockets full of Trojan horses, which is condoms, driving too fast, which is moving too fast sexually, Prince being intimidated by all the jockeys that were there before him, meaning this female had many male suitors before him, and a woman needing a lover that's gonna last. So it's about a woman that's hard and fast, is how I would read the lyrics. And what I like about this recording, and obviously the parallel here is Laura, who's only 17 and super kinky and super horny already. She's going too fast, right? She's got many lovers at this point. And what's interesting about this cassette recording is that it shows us the complexity of female sexuality and how Laura has a really hardcore edge. And I mean, they even juxtapose it because the recording cuts short because Laura says, oh, here comes my mom with the milk and cookies. What are we even talking about right now, right? So they deduce that Jacoby was actually trying to help Laura, but they're still wondering how Jacoby got the necklace. And this is an important scene because James hears the truth about how Laura feels about him, and he's officially severing ties with her, right? Because he was, that was his girlfriend, and then she died. They had a problematic relationship. And, you know, for him to hear that she thinks he was a goofball and basically too sweet or whatever, that kind of gives him a sense of closure. And he can move on, which we all know he's moving on with Laura's best friend, Donna. Yes. Everybody hates James. So Leo Johnson, he's at the Packard sawmill. He's prepping it up with some gasoline and one tied up and gagged Shelly. He's got a timer set to 1 hour because, of course, like any good villain, he wants to give Shelly time to think about what she's done while he goes to kill Bobby Briggs. What could go wrong? Meanwhile, Big Ed's wife Nadine is home alone, and she's preparing to overdose on sleeping pills and commit suicide. And I'm looking around this room by myself, and I'm saying, well, the first time I saw this, and I was like, is this really on regular ass television? What is going on? You know, the 80s and 90s were a different time. So anyway, we find out Josie paid Hank to kill her husband, Andrew Packard, for about $90,000. And he ended up serving an 18-month sentence for a lesser charge of vehicular manslaughter. And in this scene, he read in the joint a book on Oriental philosophy that talks about how limited our time is on Earth. And basically, he's trying to hustle Josie for more money. Now, what is this book he speaks of? Well, I don't know. But if you look at the term Oriental philosophy, there's a definition on Biblical Cyclopedia that says, Oriental philosophy is an ancient system seeking to explain the nature and origin of all things by the principle of emanation from an eternal fountain of being. We're going to come back to that before the end of this episode. And then another idea, when I first heard him say a book on Oriental philosophy, I thought of the I Ching. And what you'll find when you research the occult and the paranormal things like divination, oftentimes these practices will cite the I Ching. In fact, I believe it's Damien Eccles and I think it's Johnny Depp. They all have tattoos of the I Ching. Because there's an element of divination in the I Ching that uses 64 hexagrams with variations of broken and solid lines that they call yin and the yang, these opposing polarities that they used for divination. But we'll come back to this idea of the Oriental philosophy soon, okay? Another photo that, again, I'm putting all these on the Instagram. Another image you can see is that they show Hank with horns. They've got mounted horns on the wall, and Hank is standing under them, and it looks like he is the stag. He is the stag god. In paganism, the stag is the adult male deer. You saw this in True Detective symbolically, the show True Detective. The adult male deer is the king of the forest in paganism because it symbolizes fertility. And it plays a major role in the mythology of Artemis or Diana, if you want to go to the... Because in Rome, the goddess Diana was similar to the Greek goddess of Artemis. And Diana is often depicted surrounded by stags. And Diana was the deity of the hunt, a huntress goddess. And of course, in the storyline of Twin Peaks, who's Cooper always talking to through his cassette? Diana, that's who. So Hank, before the scene ends, Hank cuts their fingers where they make a blood pact, and then she rubs it on her lips for some reason. Again, not really sure what that's about. Maybe she's a vampire. So Catherine Martell, she's interrogating her husband Pete about this missing ledger. She accuses him of working with Josie, and she tries to appeal to him. She's manipulating him, trying to appeal to him about when they first fell in love, and she's in trouble. She needs his help, and she delivers the most soapiest line in all of Twin Peaks. She's like, "Because I'm in trouble." You know, it's really good. And she rolls her eyes as he's caressing her. You know, she's playing him. Back at the sheriff's office, Andy's a hero, right? Remember? Because he blasted Jacques Renault. And he rekindles with Lucy, who reveals to him that she is pregnant. Now, fun fact, we were talking about the goddess Diana and, you know, Diana being surrounded by the stags. Well, the goddess Diana is known as the protector of children and mothers, protecting them in childbirth. So it's interesting that Lucy is now going to be a mother. Meanwhile, Bobby Briggs calls the sheriff's office, leaves an anonymous message for the police to check out Leo Johnson, calls him an easy rider, okay? Let's see, where are we at here? On the hospital bed. Okay, so Jacques, he got shot, but not killed, all right? He's in the hospital, and he spills the beans. He talks about how Laura was the one that wanted to be in the Flesh World magazine. That's that swinger magazine. And the blood on Leo's shirt was from a bottle fight that they had, that he wasn't really sure why that happened. Leo took off with the girls without Jacques, so he doesn't know what happened at the train yard. So at this point, Sheriff Truman thinks Leo must have taken Laura to the train yard. Hence, he probably killed her. Catherine and Pete, they're still looking for the ledger. Pete gets distracted with his high school yearbook. Hank calls Catherine and tells her, hey, the ledger you want, it's at the sawmill. She grabs a revolver because she ain't no fool, and she heads out. Meanwhile, Big Ed gets home and sees Nadine unconscious from her suicide attempt and gets her gets her some help. So the sheriff's office, they start looking into that anonymous phone call from Bobby Briggs, and they figure out that the payphone it came from was at Easter Park. Now, this is an interesting reference that it would be Easter Park because there was a pagan springtime goddess named Ostara. Some people have tried to link Christianity to this pagan goddess of Ostara, although it's not quite... including myself, by the way. Although it's not quite that simple, nor is it true. Okay? But Easter, again, you could argue there's some connections to the paganism stuff. Meanwhile, Ben Horn, he takes the Icelanders up to One-Eyed Jack's, and he's convincing them to sign the deal, if you know what I'm saying. Because Ben knew that was going to work. Meanwhile, Bobby, he goes to Shelley's house. But Leo's there, right? Leo's there, and he attacks him. And I think he's got a big axe. He's ready to bludgeon Bobby. But Hank's outside the window, and he shoots Leo. Man, this Leo guy, he taking more bullets than 50 Cent. So he's shot again, and you see the Invitation to Love soap opera playing on television at a part where someone is getting shot. What's going on there? We got a little bit of the as above, so below going on there, right? On the small screen is happening in reality. And we know Ben Horn is part of this setup because Hank actually called Ben beforehand to confirm this arrangement. Catherine is ahead. She heads to the sawmill right when it catches on fire. She saves Shelley. Note that she takes her sweet time to save Shelley. But she saves Shelley, and they seemingly escape. Meanwhile, mysterious gloved man, who turns out to be Leland Palmer in a big reveal, goes to the hospital and kills Jacques Renault by suffocating him with a pillow after setting off the fire alarm. You know, rest in peace, Jacques. I thought he was one of the more interesting characters, but he's gone now. So Pete Martel and the fire department, they head to the sawmill at this point because it's ablaze. And Pete's like, oh man, I knew Catherine went to the sawmill. She's in there. I got to save her. And he risks his own life to go into the burning building to save Catherine. Meanwhile, Ben celebrates the ghost. We're almost done too, by the way. Ben Horn is celebrating closing this Ghostwood deal by trying to bang the new girl, who we know is Audrey, his daughter, but he does not know this yet. We see a seamstress sewing the Queen of Diamonds to Audrey's dress. Ben Horn enters the room and she gasps, and the scene cuts. Then finally, Cooper heads back to his room at the Great Northern, and here comes a mysterious gloved man to his door who shoots him. A cliffhanger for the end of season one. Was it Leland Palmer? I don't know. So let's recap. Where are we at this point in the Twin Peaks saga? James, Donna, and Maddie, they're on the case. I feel like there's a little bit of love in the air. Ben Horn, he's catching major W's. The Packard sawmill is burning down like he wanted. He closed the deal on the ghost with estates. And he's about to get it on with the new girl, One-Eyed Jacks, which he doesn't realize is his daughter yet. So that's really going to ruin his day, or at least I hope it will ruin his day. And we still don't know who killed Laura. We're still not sure. Hell, I'm not sure she's really dead at this point. Because she's showing up in Cooper's dreams. Maddie looks exactly like Laura. I mean, the things in Twin Peaks are getting complicated and weird. And here's a list of the people who are possibly dead at this stage. Leo Johnson just got shot. Bobby Briggs almost made the list. He would have caught an axe to the dome. Shelley Johnson was burning in the sawmill. We presume her and Catherine made it out because we haven't seen Catherine either. Pete Martel is in the sawmill that's burning, trying to save Catherine. We don't know if he makes it out. Nadine took a bowl full of pills. We don't know what the future holds for her. Dr. Jacoby got his dome split at Easter Park. Jacques Renault, he's dead. He got suffocated with the pillow. And now we know Leland Palmer has got some ice in his veins. He just killed Jacques Renault, and we saw he's got the black gloves. And, you know, you don't wear the black gloves unless you're down for some action. And then, of course, our favorite FBI Special Agent Dale Cooper shot. Now, some would say these are just cliffhangers to get us back for season two. But in terms of the occult, there is massive significance in all of this. This is the death and rebirth ritual. People oftentimes aren't even aware they're participating in the ritual, and it's about psychologically inducing change. Julian Huxley once wrote that that is the basic element in cultural transmission, and the transmission is psychological, because that's what a ritual is. It's the psychodrama to activate parts of the mind. There's no better way to quickly change perspectives for a person than to have a close brush with death. And that's why the secret societies, such as the Yale Skull and Bones, emulate the death of their initiates by placing them into coffins. The idea is that the old programming dies off and the initiate is armed with new insight, or even purified and looking at the world through new eyes. And this goes all the way back to King Solomon, who utilized necromancy rituals to allegedly raise Hiram Abiff from the dead. And in Peter Lavenda's book, The Dark Lord, he talks about how one cannot know life without death. And it's in this dark side where seeds are planted, dreams are born, and creativity gets sparked. And he refers to it as the cellar of the soul, the cave where the beast resides. And Carl Jung would refer to this as the shadow or the unconscious mind. And then the Kabbalists call it the Sitra Ara. This is the realm of the damaged gods, known as the Klepoth, which we discussed in Season 1, Episode 2, when we talked about how Cooper prescribed exactly 60 feet and 6 inches as the distance in the Tibetan rock-throwing experiment. And 66 is the number of the fallen spirits in the Klepoth. Now, I should make note that a listener to the podcast named Riley told me that 60 feet and 6 inches is the distance from the pitcher's mound to home plate in baseball. I didn't know that. I wasn't good at baseball. That's why my dad didn't love me. So, a joke, of course. but that's the distance. That would be a more fitting theory for that specific distance, to be honest, right? But even if we go that route, baseball has roots in theosophy, because the father of baseball, Abner Doubledale, was a very prominent theosophist, and he was very much into the occult and ritual magic and Eliphas Levi and all that stuff. Joseph Campbell, maybe you've heard of him. He had a book called Hero with a Thousand Faces. And there's a chapter called The Keys that discusses the hero's journey. In it, he describes death. He says part of the hero's journey process is to go to the underworld, which represents death or self-annihilation. Campbell says it's the point of all religious practice through prolonged discipline. Every individual gives up attachment to personal hopes and fears and accepts annihilation of self and is thus reborn. And then finally, in Mark Booth's The Secret History of the World, there's a chapter about the ancient Egyptian Osiris and Isis mythology, which describes the resurrection of Osiris from the perspective of the occult. And he claims that the myth is about the evolution of man. They believe that the cosmic mind was parceled off to each individual consciousness as the skull formed, meaning death gives life through thought. And this also cut man off from the spiritual world, because allegedly men and women could literally see these gods. It's like coming out of Plato's cave, which was an analogy of the human skull, which people like the Gnostics believe in. They think physical objects are just shadows of the thoughts of the cosmic mind in the higher reality. And the cosmic mind is the idea that we are all connected. We are all one consciousness and connected. Now, why did the cosmic mind facilitate the evolution of man to have its own thought? It was in order to abstract and allow the cosmic mind to think about itself, to reflect upon itself. It's like the moon's purpose of reflecting the sun's light. And this philosophy is called idealism. It's Gnostic, and it's arguably part of the Twin Peaks universe. That's arguably why we saw all the shots of the moon earlier. There's all this moon goddess stuff going on. There's a lot happening. So, stay subscribed and stay tuned because we're coming back with Season 2, Episode 1. The season premiere of Season 2, May the Giant Be With You. And we're going to see who makes it through the death and rebirth rituals, right? Because these people are surely going to come through with some new understandings of the world. So stay tuned for the next episode. And until next time, stay woke.